This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The massive typhoon that hit the Philippines has left thousands dead, more than 4 million displaced, and left behind enormous destruction. Lisa DeChano Cook is a professor in Western Michigan University's Department of Geography. Among her areas of study is disaster relief. Lisa DeChano Cook, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
In broad terms, what are the challenges that any city, nation faces when there is a large-scale disaster?
Food and shelter are probably the biggest two write off for those that have survived the disaster. In some cases, it's finding the dead bodies so that their families can move on. But certainly, clean drinking water is probably the number one thing in shelter, especially if it's in an area with falling temperatures or some sort of weather event that night that is going to hinder those people living through the night.
So when we look at the Philippines and that massive typhoon that hit there, that cleanup is probably going to go on for years.
Yes.
And so what are the things that they're dealing with right now? You know, when you're trying to get food and water there, what are the things that make that so difficult?
Well, in this case, one of the first things was actually getting the food and water to those places. The airport was devastated, so planes couldn't fly in. Supply ships, we had one of our battleships or carriers, sorry, that was going into the area, but it was 2 days away. So simply getting the stuff that was needed to that area was difficult because the main entryways were devastated. Once they've got the food and water to the places, it was getting it distributed. A lot of people, as one would expect, want to get their family and friends taken care of first. So there has to be a fairly organized distribution of this material. Sometimes there is and sometimes there isn't. Some of it's political, just getting it into the areas, and some of it's political, just getting it distributed. People are always clamoring. They want to stay alive. So they're going to try and get at the head of the line to get what they need, while others don't. Sometimes that's hard to overcome, especially in an area like the Philippines that has, you know, several hundred thousand people that are displaced without anything.
How important is infrastructure? And does the devastation reach a point where the infrastructure really doesn't matter anymore because things have just, you know, roads are destroyed and those sort of things?
Right. Infrastructure is pretty important, but when it's gone, it's gone. You have to start over. And sometimes that starting over is going to take a while. So getting aid out right away is, with a lack of infrastructure, is very difficult. So there has to be some military action or some other organization in there that knows what they're doing and how to handle this to be able to get an even distribution, or at least as even as can be, out, especially those that are very old or very young, because they're the most susceptible to anything that comes after the main event, as we call it.
Infrastructure could also, in this day and age, include communication infrastructure. It's a lot easier in everyday normal life to reach people, you know, text messages, Twitter, those sort of things. But again, is a lot of that really not a factor when you talk about something on the scale of the typhoon in the Philippines?
Well, the communication infrastructure was certainly wiped out. I read one article online that said a few days after the event, there were some very enterprising residents of the area that had tapped into some wire so that they could recharge their cell phones and could make contact with the outside world and let their families know. That was interesting to me because that hasn't really been something that's been focused on in the past with some of these disasters. But because of social media and cell phones and easier ways of communicating across the world, that is a much bigger issue than it ever probably has been in the past. Even with the Hurricane Katrina that hit, or the 2004 tsunami earthquake event that happened in the Indian Ocean.
How different is what happened in the Philippines compared to something, the tornadoes recently in the Midwest? I mean, obviously a smaller storm and scale, but how different is it because it's in the United States with the infrastructure we have, with the resources that we have to address it, as opposed to something that may happen in a country that doesn't have those resources?
Well, in the U.S., it's a little easier to get aid into those places. We are prepared for a lot of these different things. A lot of cities, a lot of states have their emergency management plans, their emergency management districts, bureaus, heads, people that are heading this up. Aid usually gets in there pretty fast. Even if the roads are blocked, there's typically a way that the local area can get emergency assistance in. The Red Cross is one of the first agencies that comes in, both domestically and internationally, because it's the International Red Crescent Red Cross that goes in internationally. Our military can get into some of these areas pretty quickly in the U.S. versus overseas or in other areas because of, again, political actions or whatever or whatnot that may be hindering that.
And also, as you mentioned, if the airport's down,
right,
you can't really fly in.
Right. If the airport's down, it's hard to fly in. But there are a lot of smaller airports that a lot of planes can fly into in the U.S. versus, say, the Philippines. There's one or two. You're not going to have smaller airports just because of the physical geography of the region. There's not a lot of flat space. And what is there is usually along the coast, which is going to be wiped out in a big typhoon, as we saw. So it's a little easier to get aid in. The people that have survived this are all going through the same thing. It doesn't matter what the scale is. They've all been displaced. They've all lost their homes in some cases. They might have lost family members. They're all going through a grieving process, whether it's they lost their family pet or a family member or just their house. It's all the same. It doesn't matter where you are and how much you have. You're still feeling the same things.
How much does planning and preparation factor into how successful you're going to be when something like this hits? How much can you plan and prepare for?
You can do quite a bit to plan and prepare for a lot of different types of events. It depends on where you are. You know, here in Michigan, we're going to start planning for blizzards and snow and having your car kit ready to go and planning for that sort of thing. We plan for tornadoes. We can plan, you know, to a point for hurricanes. In the Philippines, they plan to a point for a typhoon because they get typhoons, you know, fairly regularly, a couple every year. But a typhoon the size of Typhoon Cayenne that hit the Philippines, planning is a little bit more difficult. You can plan to a point. You know, when you're used to, say, a Category 3 on the Saffir-Simpson scale that comes through a storm surge of 5 to 10 feet, that's one thing. When you're trying to plan for a storm surge of maybe 20 feet, there's not much you can do in an area that's very mountainous. You can only go upslope so far, and you're not going to probably be able to get upslope far enough before that hits, which is one of the problems with the hurricane that hit the Philippines, is the storm surge was nothing that they're used to, and you can only plan to a certain point, and then you just have to hope for the best.
And evacuations are very difficult to do on a large scale.
Right.
And are we also talking about an area where an evacuation becomes, you know, more difficult in terms of people spread out, trying to find everybody, make sure that they have the message, and make sure they have a place to go?
Right. Evacuations are always difficult. It doesn't really matter what the scale is. You can look at a hurricane that hits the Gulf Coast. We can look at Katrina. We can look at Isaac. Some people didn't evacuate for various reasons. And to them, they were very solid reasons why they didn't evacuate. To those of us looking in, we might think, why did that seem like a good reason at the time? But in an area like the Philippines, when you have very high population densities in very small areas, a mountainous region, and very few airports to get people out, an evacuation, some did occur. You can go up or down the coast in some cases to try and get out of the way, but you're not going to be able to get everybody out of the way. So there were some evacuations. Again, there were people who decided not to leave because they were afraid somebody would loot their house or whatever. But, you know, everybody's got their ideas of what they're going to do. So even if an evacuation order is out, that doesn't mean everybody's going to leave either.
I'm sure we'll hear more than a few questions raised here about why go back to these towns that were wiped out. You know, you're in the path where a typhoon can do great destruction. You know that typhoons happen somewhat frequently in and around the Philippines. Why go back? As someone who studies the whole issue of geography in many different aspects, what is the answer? Why do people go back?
There's a lot of different answers. There isn't just one. Some of it is cost. People in these areas tend to be poor. It's costly for them to leave, even for them to go from Tacloban to Manila, which didn't get hit, and it's the major city in the Philippines, is costly for a lot of people. They just can't afford to go. They're subsistence farmers or whatever, and so they don't have the cash to get out. One of the biggest reasons people stay is sense of place. This is where they've lived. This is where they grow up. This is what they know. They love the area. They don't want to leave. So they're willing to take the risk of something happening again. They're willing to take, just like they were willing to take the risk to not evacuate. It's the same idea. Sense of place is very powerful. And until something happens to you, you don't really realize how big your sense of place is. People like where they are. That's why they're there. For the most part, some people aren't. But when you've grown up in a place and you've made your living in a place and then it's wiped out, if you have the means to leave, some will. We've seen a lot of people in the Philippines. They say, we just want to leave. We just want to get out. And they have. But there's a whole bigger population, especially in this area of the Philippines, that can't leave for one reason or another. They can't afford it. they don't want to. Again, that's probably one of the bigger ones, is they don't want to. They may have a bigger sense of place, even that their whole family history is there. So even the people that have come before them are buried there, and they don't want to leave them. And some of it's a religious aspect that, you know, this was an act of God. And if it's God's will for them to make it through, they make it through and they'll stay. And if it wasn't, well, then God knows what he's doing.
When people think about disasters, they may think about them from a public policy standpoint. How do we prepare? How do we get ready for them? They may think about them from some of the other sciences. You know, is climate change contributing to something as large as the typhoon? How did you go from someone interested in geography, which people may not readily associate with the idea of disaster relief, to exploring it, looking into it, and making that connection in terms of your research?
Well, I've always been fascinated with tornadoes. I didn't grow up in Tornado Alley, but when I was growing up in 1980, we had a series of tornadoes that broke out on one day. My master's thesis research was on the tree regeneration 11 years after one of those big tornadoes swept through the area that I grew up in.
Where was this?
Northwestern Pennsylvania, in the Allegheny National Forest. So I sort of got interested in it throughout my life. I didn't go into geography right away. I had a master's degree in something else and then decided to do geography, and then got sort of back into my hazards, death and destruction type of research. And from there, went into sort of this disaster relief type of issue. And especially now, as it's, you know, these with global climate change, there is this aspect that global climate change is contributing to some of these bigger storms. The super typhoon being one of them, the Hurricane Katrina that hit New Orleans a few years ago is another. So this isn't going away. This is just going to get bigger. And the more people who understand how disaster relief needs to happen, especially proactive versus reactive, we can save more lives. And so this is only going to get to be a bigger issue. And so the more people that are doing it, the more people that have expertise in it that can help out when necessary, is going to help save lives in the end, hopefully.
Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Lisa DeChano-Cook is a professor in Western Michigan University's Geography Department who studies disaster relief. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.